All right, this is Gary Parrish again from CBS Sports. It is now Wednesday, October 14th. This is, of course, the I Own College Basketball Podcast, and I'm joined, as usual, by my colleagues Matt Norlander and Sam Bassini, and we are right in the middle of our preseason rollout. The All-America teams are out. The top 25 and one is out. In fact, we ranked all 351 teams. And just let me be clear, I had nothing to do with anything between 27 and 351. I turned that over to the ambitious youngins, Norlander and Bassini. What, and Matt, I'll start with you.
Okay.
How do you even go about ranking teams 27 through 351?
All right. We can get into this right away.
This was
tossed out at our summer summit for college hoops for CBSSports.com, and I was all about it, and Sam was like, absolutely, and Gary was like, good luck with all that.
Yeah, but it sounds like something I don't need to be involved in.
Yeah. So, for the pure ridiculous audacity of it, I did want to give it a go. Now, we got tremendous, like, really, really good response on it, which is good, and I will say I was surprised that all right, as a comparison, so we released our top 101 players, tons of hate flowing constantly, like just real like issues. I'm still getting
most of it from Doug Gottlieb.
Oh, you know, no doubt about it. Shout out to Gottlieb, absolutely. And by the way, Gary mentions how he wasn't really part of the 27-351. Gottlieb thought he was, and I wasn't exactly correcting that information. He kept at mentioning Parrish. Totally fun on that end.
just ignored it all. I'm like, I'm busy. I can't get involved in this.
So with the 351, though, there hasn't been too much blowback, which is kind of surprising. Granted, you know, most fan bases of teams ranked below 120 – broadly speaking, one, they don't follow me, too. There aren't that many of them, so I didn't expect Alcorn State or Central Arkansas fans to come with their pitchforks. But in terms of how we did this, this was a bear for sure. I mean, this was hours upon hours, because we don't want to get it.
Me and Matt on the phone for like 15
at least,
hours.
Yeah, over a course of a couple days. And so, because we didn't want to, like, you know, some of these were going to end up being wrong, but we don't want to look totally stupid. And as weird as it sounds, we don't want to put a team 312 that really should probably be closer to 212. So, Ken Pomeroy did mention me on Twitter. He's like, you pretty much didn't make any huge mistakes, except that Princeton is way too low. So I'll take that overall. A lot of fun. And for anyone that hasn't checked it out, be sure to. I mean, the list is all over CBSSports.com or on your CBS Sports app. Actually, the other cool thing was a buddy of mine, he's like kind of an Apple fanboy, and he's just one of those people that has to get everything that when it comes out. So he's had the Apple Watch, and he sent me a photo of when our 101 and 351 went out of each list. He got the updates like on his actual phone as he was working out and was like linking through them. I thought that was pretty cool. But just a few quick teams, and I'll let Sam blab here. People might be curious about. We put Texas at 33rd with Shaka. Texas was one that I think we knew we had to have top 40, but we're not totally convinced on. I was kind of high on Xavier, relatively speaking, so we have them at 39. And we have LSU, who has Ben Simmons, our number two player in the country, at 38. LSU might end up being too low because they've got talent for sure. I mean, Tim Quarterman is going to get NBA looks, and Hornsby can hit the threes, and Blakeney is a five-star point guard, but we got to kind of see it first. The only team that I would say I did get blowback on was Syracuse at 43. I mean, I think Orange fans are just overall, they're kind of desperate for some love from media after all that they've gone through here. But like Gabinejay wasn't on our top 101. We got a lot of pushback on that.
I suggested him.
I know. You can blame me for Gabinejay. There's no doubt about it. Louisville fans had an issue with us putting them at 50. I'll say right now, Louisville at 50 is generous with what they have with that roster. Personally, I believe that we could have easily put them lower. I mean, there's just random ones. Like Illinois State, we have in the top 60. They're going to be better than people realize, I think. And like we have Illinois worse than people might realize. We have them 65th. So overall, I mean, Sam, I'll let you kind of take it from here. A lot of fun, but in terms of checking rosters and seeing stuff, it was a massive undertaking. And given the response, I'm already kind of breaking out into cold sweats, knowing that we're going to have to do this again next year. And Parrish is totally going to help.
I'll handle 1 through 26. You guys can do the rest. And then with the players, just as long as we're speaking openly here, we all did participate in the top 101 players in college basketball. But as we got to about 80, I had to bow out because I was in a wiffle ball tournament this weekend. Yeah. And we needed it done by Saturday, and I just couldn't participate anymore. I was too busy playing wiffle ball.
Well, he sends the email. He's like, hey, guys, listen, man. I got a wiffle ball tournament. You guys can finish this without me if you want. And I get the email, and I send him a text. I'm like, well, I don't know if he's going to check me out. I'm like, GP, just send me like 12 more names so like we get some more people in there just in case. And I never got a text back.
No,
so,
I thought my email made it pretty clear. I was busy. I'm not going to start. I said, unless you guys want to wait till tomorrow, I can't participate in this anymore today. And then you text message me and say, hey, if you want to participate, I just told you I cannot participate. I am focused on wiffle ball right now. And so I never saw the final list until it posted CBS Sports. How did you guys leave off Robert Carter?
Okay.
Told Matt, if we're going to have Rashid Suleiman on the list, we should probably have Robert Carter. We should probably put Robert Carter ahead of Rashid Suleiman. Matt, okay. Go ahead.
All right. So here's the deal. We, of course, could have put Carter and Suleiman on the list, but then I thought that would make Maryland the only team with five players, and then they should be our number one team. They're not our number one team. I think the Carter stuff is getting a little out of hand here. He's a good player.
He might be their second best player.
He might be, and he might be their fourth or fifth best player. I promise you
he's better than Diamond Stone right now. Right now.
I think, yes. Okay, and Diamond Stone, who is, I think, 80 or 81 on the list, freshman five-star big man. We talked about this because the Diamond Stone is basically once we lost you and it came to Sam and I and we got on the phone and started debating.
We had Diamond Stone with GP.
Did we? Okay. Well, with Stone, we basically said we like the chances of Stone being better come February, March than Carter, so let's go with him just to be safe. The Carter one, I fully admit, and I said this on Twitter, and Frischilla had mentioned me as well, I think Robert Carter is the one player on the list. And by the way, this was last year when I insisted we have Denzel Valentine and we did not have him on the list. He was not on our top 100 last year. Carter could be the one that really makes us, but really me, look bad. I picked Suleiman instead because Suleiman's been on the list every year. He was almost a legacy choice, but it's like, I see what Rashid Suleiman is, and I think he is one of the best 101 players in the game. I bet
Coach K doesn't believe that.
I you know what, you are you might very well be correct.
The other one that stands out, so Robert Carter, I was like, ooh, probably should have him, and then Ryan Arcidiacono, right? Like
that's another
Norlander special.
No, it's not a Norlander. Don't throw me under the bus like this.
I won't.
You know what? When Parrish was in it, When Parrish was involved, and I'm totally dominating this podcast right now. When Parrish was involved, we had Arch on the list. But then as we get to the 80s and 90s, and we've still got like 30 candidates, like I understand that the guys in the 80s and the 90s, for the most part, casual sports fans don't know who these people are. But for people that follow the sport, like these are legitimately rational candidates to be putting in. And so when we're looking, and just to use like Rashid Suleiman as an example, I'm sorry, but Rashid Suleiman is absolutely a better college basketball player than Ryan Arcidiacono. Even though Arcidiacono shared Big East Player of the Year, I understand that, but this isn't about most valuable player kind of things.
Arcidiacono was the fourth best player on Villanova last year.
Yes, and he'll probably be the fourth best player on Villanova this year. And so because of that, like we got to the point where like Daniel Ochefu, he was behind Arch, and we're like, that's not right. Ochefu is clearly better. Jalen Brunson, incoming guard, clearly a better player than Arch. So Arch, Carter, Gabinejay, and then Jared Udhoff at Iowa. Those were the four we definitely heard the most blowback on.
I agree with the people. I think the bottom of our players list is embarrassing.
Stop it!
I'm joking. But I would have Carter on that list. I would have Arcidiacono on that list.
You would also have the little homie Phil Forte.
I would. Yeah. And how did he get like Big 12 little guard shot score 15 points per game? You can't put Phil Forte on the list.
I mean, does he do anything else beyond shoot?
What does that even mean? Like, if you like, people make millions of dollars doing nothing but shooting.
Not really.
Of course they do.
Sometimes they do. Like J.C. Carroll in Spain makes millions of dollars, but he's a 5'11", 5'10" guard who can't defend anyone.
What about Kyle Korver? He makes millions of dollars just doing nothing but shooting the basketball.
Kyle Korver is also a plus defender in the NBA.
Oh, God. This,
look at that. Oh, look at Sam serving it right back to GP right now.
Jesus. Plus defender, minus defender is the go-to hard to quantify, impossible to quantify stat that people use whenever they want to validate what it is they're saying. Like, that was the pushback on
it. Like, Kyle Korver's a legitimate, like, plus defender in the NBA. He's a guy that, opposing offensive players really struggle to score against. He has incredible timing when trying to block shots on the perimeter.
Let me ask you a question.
He's a guy. He's a really good team defender. Like, this is – Kyle Korver is so much better than
– I'm not comparing Kyle Korver to Phil Forte.
I think you are, actually. I think you're saying Phil Forte is better than Kyle Korver.
Better than Phil Forte is in college, like, by far.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. Why does Kyle Korver make the money he makes in the NBA?
Because he's a shooter that can do other things.
Good.
He's a shooter that can do other things. He's not just a shooter. That's why he was a minimum player until, 2012.
You must have forgotten Phil Forte is also white, which makes him a coach on the floor.
That's right.
So he's a shooter who is also automatically a coach on the floor.
Let's just address the fact that Phil Forte is the physical embodiment of the closest representation of Gary Parrish in college basketball.
He's a shooter who also, based on his skin color, is a coach on the floor who plays the game the right way and is probably, according to our buddy Jeff Goodman, a better person than he is a player.
Which, by the way, I share this pet peeve with Parrish. That would mean he's literally one of like the 300 best humans on the planet.
Holy crap. I hate that when people say it. If I could remove two phrases from the human language, one would be the human language, the English language.
language?
Okay. I'm sure they said it another way. If I could remove two phrases from the English language, it would be these. When people mess up and say, I could care less, as opposed to I couldn't care less. I don't know why that's so difficult for some people to grasp. It's couldn't care less. The other one makes no sense. And the other one would be, great coach, even better person. Great player, even better person. Like there was some kid committed somewhere the other day, last week, and Goodman, and it's not even, I'm not making this about Goodman, I just remember him most recently saying this. And he was like, so, you know, whatever school just got a great player. He's even a better person. I'm like, well, okay. He's a top 20 high school player in the country. So you're telling me he's an even better person than that? Like he's one of the 20 best people in high school? Like, what are you even talking about? it makes when you actually think about what you're saying, it makes no sense whatsoever. Like there's no way you could be, if you're a top 20 basketball player in high school, there is no way you could reasonably be assumed to be an even better person than you are player. You'd have to be, by definition, one of the 19 best people in high school. So what are we talking about? Why do people say that?
I know. All right, we'll circle back to the
list. Is it weirder that people say that or that it bothers me so much?
Probably the latter, but I kind of
I agree with you.
It's just one of those things. It's a lazy turn of phrase that people have kind of gone to. But I totally get you. So we have on our top 101 players. First of all, I love that we went 101 in the style of GP's top 25 and one, which we'll get to in just a second. But Chris Dunn is our number one player. And while we kind of addressed, I think, some of this on our last podcast with the All-American, the reason why Wiltshire is our All-American preseason player of the year and Dunn is our number one is, you know, in terms of team production value, MVP-like qualities, we think, and being on a surefire NCAA tournament team. That's why Wiltshire's there. Dunn has the ability to carry Providence to the tournament, but there remains a possibility Providence doesn't even get there. And if they do, they're certainly not going to be a five-seed or better, most likely. But Dunn's ability is undeniable. Amazing defender. Might be the best on-ball defender in the country on top of being the best point guard. So I did a long profile on him. Great kid.
Is he even better kid than he is a player?
Not a better kid than he is a player. I can definitely say that with confidence. But listen,
he's an okay kid who's a great basketball player. Like that's probably the most accurate way to put it.
Well, he
it's he has strong always, thoughts on How I Met Your Mother. That's
he, yeah. Listen, that's what was so funny is I sit down with him and we you know we get into talking just like some random stuff and he starts going off on how he loves the show Friends and
oh god
and like he's like, dude, I think Friends is the best show ever, and I'm
why
like,
would he
are you?
Say
and I
that?
And I went back on it. I went back on him with this. I was like,
Norlander hates Friends. Hates.
I do not hate Friends, but I'll tell you what, it is not rewatchable. Like,
well, why did that even become such a big phenomenon anyway? Like, it's a comedy was, that's not funny.
Well, like, you know what though? But I think in the 90s it was, and it had six beautiful
it's
people
still
on it.
Funny now.
And you think it's funny now, Sam?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, gosh. It's not like
I judge people based on whether or not they think Friends is funny.
You also judge people whether or not they think Saved by the Bell is a good TV show.
Saved by the Bell also just awful. Like I don't even know why that became. Like at some point we've talked about this before. It became cool to say you like Saved by the Bell, so people just started saying I like Saved by the Bell. Awful television show.
I'll say this: Saved by the Bell is one of those things that I really enjoyed. Like whenever I was, you know, 9 to 12 in the '90s and like early 2000s, but. It's not rewatchable at all now. Like Saved by the Bell, you can't even. It's really hard to rewatch.
Without
but Friends, I don't think is that bad.
Friends is. I mean, come on. It's
very '90s.
I understand this is a college basketball podcast, but Ross gets absolutely insufferable after like the fourth season. Like he flat out ruins the show. Chandler has a weight change every 7 episodes. It's bizarre world. But regardless, Chris Dunn loves it, and actually. He has a Breaking Bad Heisenberg shirt that he said he was going to send me a photo of, and I still have not gotten that yet. But when I do, I will tweet it out. Overall,
doesn't everybody have a Breaking Bad Heisenberg shirt?
I do not. Do you?
No, my son does.
Okay. Oh, well, there you go. But it'll be interesting to see Providence this year. For anyone that didn't get a chance to see a lot of them, just know that they're gonna run like crazy. They might be one of the fastest teams in the country getting up and down, and that'll be really fun because Chris Dunn is genuinely incredible and he's got an interesting backstory. I will give Goodman some pub here because I know he published his Dunn story, and his is more the mother angle. I kind of went with the fact that when I was talking to coaches and the players, they're like, Chris Dunn is just flat out, he's like a hilarious dude. Like, he's just really funny. And I kind of tied that into Cooley kind of gave me some stuff, the coach, Ed Cooley. Like, they both came from really tough backgrounds, and they definitely used that, you know, humor to shed a lot of personal pain, the same way Parrish does on this very podcast. So it's an interesting read. I would highly recommend it. But, I mean, did you guys want to touch on any of our 101 players?
Well, I think some folks got confused, like you pointed out, that hey, how is Cal Wiltshire the National Player of the Year? But
fourth on our list.
But yeah, and you know, again, and we talked about this last week. In my eyes, National Player of the Year is somebody who is great usually someone who is great on a great team. And I think, you know, Chris Dunn just didn't check that box for me. He's great. I don't know if Providence is going to be great. I don't know if Providence is even going to be NCAA tournament good. I think the Big East media poll came out this morning, and they're picked fifth in the Big East. So is fifth in the Big East going to get you there? I mean, I don't know. I don't know, yeah. Right? Yeah. So that it was just some uncertainty. Nobody is uncertain about Chris Dunn. It's just that throughout history, you can't really find many examples of National Players of the Year who weren't on NCAA tournament teams. And so I think he's hurt a little bit by the – at least the idea that that maybe his team won't be good enough to allow him to get the type of awards his talents suggest he's capable of. But if we're just listing the best 101 college basketball players, there's nothing crazy. You know, that's a totally different project, and he's number one. We also
Ben
had
Simmons is number two.
Right. Well, like we had the one. I was on a radio station in Kentucky earlier today, and they asked me, you know, why Jamal Murray over Scal, if Labissiere, if we have Scal as a first team All-American, and I guess Jamal Murray's a second team All-American, and I just explained it by saying that was simply a vote. I don't think that's the way I put it, but you guys did. Yeah, it
well,
just sort of the
well,
results
the,
of the vote.
The way to explain it is that, you know, we try to do a couple of perimeter players, a couple of forwards on the All-American team, and Jamal Murray, you know, kind of got behind the eight ball of Chris Dunn and Buddy Hield,
right.
And I mean that just is why, you know.
Right.
I think Murray's going to have a bigger impact than Scal this year. I really do.
The interesting thing is that, and I don't doubt both those guys are great, and they're both going to be lottery picks. John Calipari, and you can never really tell if he's being genuine when he says these types of things. Like, he held a press conference this morning. And to that point, I mean this, like, somebody asked him about what NBA scouts thought of Sunday's combine and who were they impressed by. And he immediately starts talking about Charles Matthews, which is just, like, silly, okay, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, so you never know what is a... what his agenda is.
Also,
although to be fair, though, didn't that kind of happen with Booker last year in the preseason and ended up coming? I might be totally misremembering that, but I feel like
he did. He was playing up Booker really early, and
he was,
and then he, you know, Booker developed into what he was. But one of the things he said this morning is he said Tyler Ulis is our best player, and it's not even close. Now, I don't know if that's true, but it was something interesting that came out of his mouth, that it, not just Tyler Ulis could be our best player or should be our best player. He said he's our best player, and it's not even close. So perhaps we should have Ulis even higher than we do.
We got a lot. I got a lot of comments that Ulis was too low overall on the list, which I kind of get. Listen, I think he's good. He's 33rd. I mean, there could very well could be something to that. I don't dispute that. And I also think the inherent challenge with this list sometimes is when you have certain programs that have three or four really, really good guys, and that's almost always Kentucky, you almost unintentionally or intentionally don't want to have, like, you know, four of the top 12 be from the same program. Not that we should be ranking them based on who we think is, you know, who's the best in that exact order. So I can understand that, that Ulis being too low, maybe we'll look a little silly at the end of the year, but maybe not. I mean, he's a very good player. I also think Cal's comments are coming from a certain place of Ulis playing the position that he does and him knowing what Cal is asking of the guys at this point, because he's been through it for a year, while, as you know, Murray and Briscoe and Scull, to name the, you know, three of their most high profile guys, they're not necessarily in the same spot. So it's easy for Cal to say something like that and for everyone to kind of, you know, listen to what he's saying in terms of the team.
Another thing he said this morning, Sam, let me ask you about this. He said that he does not plan to play Ulis and Briscoe together. Does that surprise you?
Considering I expect Tyler Ulis to play like 30 minutes a game, if he's the best player on their team, 32, 33 minutes a game. Yeah, it surprises me, because Isaiah Briscoe was probably the best point guard recruit in the country, or at least the most highly rated recruit in the country at the position. So it would certainly be weird for him to only play, you know, 10, 12 minutes a game.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps he's just trying to motivate Briscoe, because he said the problem is Isaiah defers too much to Tyler when they're on the court together. And so maybe that's just something you'll figure out. My guess is by the end of it, they'll be operating a lot like John Wall, Eric Bledsoe once upon a time. Cal's pretty good at getting his best players on the floor together. I suspect he'll figure it out.
Yeah, and he said, I want to say, at that combine on, when was it? It was Sunday, right? He said that he'd have no problem playing the three of them, including Murray,
right,
together.
Right. So,
I'm kind of confused by that. Going back to Tyler Ulis, though, being too high, too low, I don't think I was the lowest on him of the three of us, but it's worth mentioning that he was, like, good last year. His numbers, though, if you look at them, you know, he put up under 10 points per 40 minutes. Like, his efficiency numbers aren't great. I get that Cal loves the defense. I get that he loves everything that Ulis brings, but let's pump the brakes a little bit on Tyler Ulis. Like, he's really good, don't get me wrong, but So let's not go crazy here, I would say. He was a very good player that was a backup point guard last year, and a good backup point guard.
I hear you. I guess while we're on the subject of Kentucky, we could discuss just for a moment the latest with Scal Labissiere. I reported yesterday that Jack Britton, who is what amounts to an investigator with the NCAA, he interviewed a former Memphis AAU coach named Keith Easterwood, essentially about what Easterwood had told me roughly a year ago in terms of his dealings with Gerald Hamilton, that Gerald Hamilton essentially called him and said, hey, I need your help. How do I go about making money off of a basketball player? You know, and the conversations went from there. I don't think this is a surprise, because once I wrote that story and detailed all of the red flags surrounding Labissiere's guardian, there was always going to be a process to him becoming eligible, and the NCAA was always going to ask a lot of questions. So here we are, and they were always going to talk to Easterwood because his name is the one that's in the story. What I found somewhat interesting is that they talked to him this past Monday afternoon, which means they're still very much investigating. And, you know, who knows, you know, on what timetable the NCAA works and how quickly they can wrap things up if they want to. But the idea that they're still asking questions only 19 days before Kentucky's first exhibition can't be a great sign for Kentucky fans, can it?
No, not at all. Everything that I'm hearing indicates that this is simply not going to be an issue and that he's going to be eligible. But we are getting closer and closer here. Given the way the NCAA has a tendency to carry on with these things and how we have seen players get to the season before and not necessarily know of their eligibility right away, I'm not convinced that we'll have an answer on this by November 13th. I want to believe that we will, and I want to believe that it's going to come in the final minute. But there's like six or seven guys still. It's not just Diallo and Scal, even though those are the two most high-profile guys. With this one in particular, I guess the key thing is not that it's key, but
how do you know there are six or seven guys?
Goodman tweeted out that there were a number of guys the other day that were still awaiting.
I want to say that both Lovett and Yakwe at St. John's still aren't cleared either.
Right. I mean, yeah, Diallo and Scout aren't the only ones, but the whole lot of names aren't out there. You really don't know for sure until the games start and you see who's playing and
right.
And who's
absolutely
not.
Correct.
What I would say is. Some of it's going to – listen, I was on a radio station in Kentucky this morning. They asked me about this. Here's what I would say about the Le Bissier thing. His guardian was undeniably – and if he says otherwise, he's not telling the truth – trying to figure out ways to fund his organization, his foundation, by leveraging Scal. He just was. I had one person tell me that he had been shopping him in some form since his freshman year of high school, shopping him to AAU teams, shopping him to high schools, shopping him, the way it's been reported. I can't tell you for sure what he got, how much he got, if he got anything, but, you know, the idea that he was, his motives were pure all along, that's just, I reject that. I know too many people who've dealt with Gerald Hamilton and then talked to me about their dealings with Gerald Hamilton. He made it lots of conversations he had with college coaches always circled back around to his foundation. And he was always, he was forever curious. So, coach, could you tell me, I've got this foundation. Like, what would be your advice on how I could go about getting this foundation funded? I'm trying to do great things for kids and so on and so forth. By the way, somebody trying to do great things for kids, he's only had one kid ever live with him for an extended period of time. Hmm. Happened to be a future lottery pick. So like, I'll be a little more impressed when you're helping, a 5'7" girl from Haiti.
Someone who's a better person than they truly are.
Someone who is actually a better person than they are a player. Beyond that, the Commercial Appeal newspaper in Memphis did a story, a series, basically tearing through all of Josh Pastner's emails, and they requested them all, Freedom of Information request. They got them all, and they used them to try to tell different stories about things connected to Josh or the Memphis basketball program. And one of the things they found in these emails was an email that Josh sent to his staff. And the email was essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially, hey, I want to make sure you guys understand that we cannot help Gerald Hamilton fund his foundation. We can't set him up with people who can help. We can't be involved in that in any way. So I just wanted to remind you, we can't be involved in that. So, like, my question has always been, what made Josh Pastner think he needed to send that email to his assistants? He didn't send that email about anybody, literally anybody else in the world, but he sent that email to his staff about Gerald Hamilton. Why did he feel like he needed to send that email? Well, the answer is simple. Because he was under the impression that Gerald Hamilton had his hand out. And by hand, I mean, was trying to get that foundation funded in some way. And he just wanted to remind his staff, this is not, it's obviously illegal if we do it, but it is also illegal in violation of NCAA rules if we encourage other people to do it. So just stay away from that completely. So to me, that's not a smoking gun, but it underlines the impression college coaches were getting from Gerald Hamilton. And then it's going to be interesting what the NCAA actually finds. And then it's also going to be interesting, and I don't know the answer to this, what exactly will they consider an extra benefit? Like, is this an extra benefit? If you start a basketball team from nothing, built around one player and a bunch of idiots, you call them Reach Your Dream, and then you go play in tournaments in the state of Kentucky for appearance fees. Like, is it an extra benefit if a basketball tournament organizer, who might also happen to be a Kentucky booster, pays you $5,000 to bring your team to an event for a weekend? Why are they paying that $5,000 for your team? They're paying it to get Kentucky's top-ranked recruit there. So they're essentially, what you would have there is someone who could, be defined on some level as a Kentucky booster throwing $5,000. And these are all just numbers I'm making up, but it's not hard to figure. Like, go look at where Reach Your Dream Prep played. They played tournaments in Kentucky. Is the NCAA going to interpret that as an extra benefit? I don't know the answer to that, but these are all the things that that I think on some level should have Kentucky fans worried. That said, the list of players who have ever been ruled permanently ineligible is very, very small. And this isn't an Enes Kanter situation. The difference with Kanter was that he was a professional basketball player in the NCAA's eyes. He was not an amateur. So he couldn't play college basketball. This would be simply an extra benefits case. And so even if it does go the wrong way for Kentucky, or specifically for Scow, I do think he'll play this year. I don't know that he'll be there opening night. I don't know that he won't. I just don't know that he will. But I do believe he will play at some point this season.
More meaningful to the overall success of their team based on their eligibility this year, guys. Scow at Kentucky or Diallo at Kansas?
I think Scow at Kentucky probably.
And yeah, I agree with that.
The reason would be at Kansas, Diallo might push them to another level, but I mean, that's a veteran team, a bunch of guys who've been in college basketball forever. Oh, by the way, Kansas fans hate us over Wayne Selden not being on the list.
Whatever.
I don't feel bad about that one, actually. Yeah.
What's up, Sam?
I don't feel bad about that one either. There are some guys where I feel pretty bad. We should have had them on the list. Some of the guys we mentioned earlier, like Archie Diacono, maybe we should have had him on the list. I don't feel that bad about Wayne Selden. Selden hasn't been a good college basketball player for his 2 years yet.
But to circle back around to the point, I think we might believe Diallo makes Kansas a top five team, but even without him, they're top 10 based on just the veterans they have coming back. With Kentucky, a lot of the reason some people think they should be preseason number one, it's based on talent. It's based on the talent in the program, and if you don't have your most talented kid, that affects that, right?
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yes. You
know, I agree with that. I think that Scal is definitely much more important. And just from a fit perspective, Kentucky's a team that could struggle to space the floor a little bit. They do have Tyler Ulis, who's a really good shooter, but you figure he's going to handle the ball a lot. Murray's a really good shooter, but he's also a guy that likes to get into the lane, likes to slash, and likes to get to the bucket. Scalabissier is the kind of guy who can space the floor for those attacking guards like Murray, Ulis, and Isaiah Briscoe. He can take his man out of the lane and make that easier for them to get all the way to the rim. And without him, you're looking at Marcus Lee, who's never been much of a shooter. You're looking at Isaac Humphreys, who's still pretty young at 17 years old, and we don't know what to expect from him on the college level yet. I would say that not only from a talent perspective, but from a fit perspective, Scal is tremendously important to Kentucky and what they're planning to do. So I would definitely choose him over Diallo.
Let's wrap this up by talking about the top 25 and one. We've talked about where we had teams outside of the top 26, but really haven't talked about the top of it at all. North Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, and Maryland. I want to ask you if you agree or disagree, because we talked about all of this in advance of even publishing it. But have you guys paid attention to who is number one at other places? I really haven't. Somebody asked me the other day, do I think North Carolina will be number one in most places? And I really don't know. I think somebody has had Maryland number one. I saw somebody else has had Kentucky number one. There does seem to be, and I think this is unique to most seasons, four reasonable options. Like, I don't think you can get called, you can reasonably be called an idiot. People just call you an idiot all the time for whatever. But, like, I don't think you can reasonably be called an idiot as long as you have Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, or Maryland number one. Does that seem about right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of gabbing on this, so I'll give it – I'll cede to Sam here. But my succinct thought is our top four are the only four realistic logistical teams in the preseason to have as a number one team, one of those four. They all make sense. We really debated all over all four of them before settling on Carolina. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that I made the – pitch for Kansas is number one, just because I think they're the team I feel is least likely to make us look stupid at the end of the year, just because we know that they're going to win the Big 12. I mean, it's just a thing that's going to happen, even though the Big 12 is as deep as it's ever been, with Oklahoma, with Iowa State being incredibly talented. Kansas is going to win the Big 12. It happens every year. And they have a lot of experience this year. And, you know, these kids definitely do have that level of success. And with Diallo and with Carlton Bragg coming in, it's hard for me to see another team defeating them. And then you have Maryland, who I think is a little bit more risky, but probably has a higher ceiling than any other team in America, just because, like we were talking about earlier, in the top 101, they have five kids that legitimately could be the number one, or could be in the top 101. And then you look at guys like Jared Nickens, who is a very useful player. DeMontre Dodd is another very useful player. They have a great rotation of guys that could very well end up being the number one. And then you look at North Carolina, and they kind of mesh everything together, right? They have the youth. They have the upside with guys like Justin Jackson, who is probably the guy that I got the most pushback on being so low on our list. We had him in the 60s, I believe. And you look at guys like him, guys like Theo Pinson, and guys like Joel Berry, who are all pretty young and have upside, but they also have the experience in Marcus Page, Bryce Johnson, and Kennedy Meeks. So I think that there are a lot of options here. Kentucky is probably the most talented team from just from an NBA draft perspective, from a pure these guys are skilled perspective. So any of these teams could be the number one. We ended up going with North Carolina because it's the best mix.
Yeah, I think North Carolina was probably the safest pick. Kentucky, you've got they're young, even if they're super talented, they're young, and you just never know which way that could go. It usually goes well, but like it there was one year, the Nerland Snow year, where it went poorly. Kansas, we don't know what's going on with Diallo for certain. And then while on paper, I think I like Maryland starting five as much as I like anybody starting five in college basketball. It is true that the analytics didn't love them last year. I think they've even finished outside of the top 25 at KenPom. So
they were like closer to 40.
Right. So like
25. Yeah.
Listen, they were a 28 win team. They return Melo Tremble. They add two McDonald's All-Americans and a transfer from Georgia Tech, who's a double digit scorer. The roster is really good, but, KenPom's ratings love North Carolina relative to how it felt about Maryland. And I just think when you add everything together, you could reasonably go in any of those directions, but North Carolina made the most sense to me.
Yeah, Maryland last year went something like 12-1 in two possession games, so games that were decided by six or less points.
Right.
That's pretty abnormal, I will say. And yeah, part of that is because Melo Tremble is an incredible guy to give the ball to at the end of games whenever you have a lead and you know he's going to shut it down at the free throw line. but 12-1 is excessively good. It would be a surprise if they were able to pull that off
again. Right, and it becomes how you want to interpret that. Do you chalk it up? I think Maryland fans would say, yeah, of course we were 12-1 in games that were close because we've got a great primary ball handler and Mark Turgeon's a genius, right? That would be that argument. On the other hand, some of it is just, you know, sometimes balls go in, sometimes they don't. I don't care how good you are. Sometimes, balls bounce a certain way. It doesn't matter how good you are. And you just, last year, basically in those situations, everything went Maryland's way every single time. And you can't reasonably expect it to go that way again. You can still be great at the end of game situations, but like 12-1 in close games is it's abnormally good.
Like if you go 8-4 in close game situations like that, again, that's a really good year. That's an awesome year, but it's still the difference between 22 wins and 25 wins,
right.
And that's a major, major difference. So, I think that argument is very fair. Whenever we did a three-pointer on who the team we think is that could underachieve among the top 5 to 10 teams in the country, Maryland was my pick just for that reason. But, you know, you look at the roster and they probably do also have the most upside of anyone.
All right. Well,
hold on. Before we wrap it up,
I'm ready to go.
Hold on, real quick.
What?
You don't have to settle this on the podcast, but I want to set it up on the podcast. Okay. So, you are a fan of the New York Mets, and I'm a fan of Chicago Cubs, and so we got a Game 5 situation coming up here for the Metropolitans against the Dodgers on Thursday. Going on, Greinke and DeGrom should be great stuff. If your Mets win,
you think the Dodgers will cheat this time again, or they'll try to play it straight?
You know, it's gotten to the point. It's so funny. I never thought of GP as a Mets. I kind of always knew you were a Mets fan, but I never really like associated the team with you for whatever reason until this year. Because you got like, I don't know, maybe it's just because this is as good as they've ever been since I've known you. But I was like, holy crap! Like,
no, I grew up
about the Mets in the middle of May right now.
Well, I grew up in I'm 38 years old. So when I was a kid, you know, they didn't have MLB extra innings and all that stuff. You basically were reduced, in my market at least, you could watch three teams on television. The Cubs because of WGN, the Braves on TBS, and the Mets on WWR. And so, the Braves were just awful. Like, it didn't make any sense to, like, even pay attention to them. A lot of most people became Cubs fans. Like, that's why the Cubs have fans nationwide, because of WGN. And I just sort of latched onto the Mets. You know, they had these young, interesting players, and I was a young baseball player, and I like genuinely became a Mets fan when I was like 5, 6 years old. And then, like all throughout my childhood, all throughout high school, all throughout college, like I'm the guy who, you know, the Mets Braves are playing in the playoffs. Let's go. I'd go to Atlanta. Like I'd go to Shea Stadium. Like And at some point in my adult life, I think after our first son was born, they were just, you know, they've been so bad for so long, I just sort of detached from it. Like, still had the shirts and the hats and stuff, but I just wasn't going to watch it on a day-to-day basis. And this year, you know, they got off to a good start. And I was like, you know what? I bought the Major League Baseball like season pass. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to like care again. I'm going to force myself to care again. And man, I'm both feet in. Like I got irrationally, emotionally attached to everything. Like Saturday night when the Dodgers cheated and broke Ruben Tejada's leg, I don't remember being that angry about something that didn't actually affect my life. I can't remember the last time I was that angry about anything that like doesn't happen in my home. Like I get angry if my son doesn't do his homework the way he's supposed to, but like being angered by a sporting event, and not because I was like betting on it or something, like just being angry about, I woke up Sunday, like still mad as hell about the whole thing. Like I hate Chase Utley right now. And the idea that I, like, I'm not the guy who goes around hating just people in general, but especially not people I don't even know. I despise Chase Utley. I couldn't stop thinking about him. So I can't wait. This Wednesday afternoon right now, I cannot wait for tomorrow night, that Game 5. I hate the idea that you got to beat Greinke in L.A. to advance, but whatever. If DeGrom's awesome again.
I'm pretty excited to go to that game.
Sam's going to the game.
Hey, Sam, Sam Loop's in here. He's actually going to the game. It's pretty awesome. How'd you swing that, by the way?
Last night I went on StubHub and paid $90 for a ticket.
How much was it? How much was it?
There you go. It was okay, so bucks. I'd love if the Mets win. If the Mets win and they play the Cubs, on Twitter, because what's going to happen is this series will start well before we have another podcast, so we're going to have to come to some sort of fun little wager here, because God knows the next time the Cubs are ever going to be in the playoffs. I know, understand they have really good young players, but that
the guarantee. Cubs are going to be in the playoffs every year going forward.
Shut up. I mean, honestly.
I don't know if I agree with
that. Okay. Well, like, think about this. I mean, look at, they got all these young hitters who are better. Like, everybody thought Schwarber could be great in theory.
I cannot believe how good he is.
They didn't think he'd be great.
Schwarber hit that ball yesterday, like, to the moon.
He hit one in Pittsburgh the same way. He's
insane.
And then,
which, by the way, I'm a Pirates fan, and, like, I told myself I was not going to watch baseball the rest of the year after the Cubs beat the Pirates and Jake Arrieta just dominated the Pirates. But, yeah, I'm just going to this game. It's just way too fun.
And so everybody thought Chris Bryant could be great in theory. Nobody thought he'd be this great this quickly. So you've got all these young bats under contract, right? And then you've got Arrieta under contract. You've got John Lester. The guy from the Red Sox?
Lester.
Yeah, John Lester under contract. And then they're going to go out, because they're a big market team, they've got the money to go out and sign another frontline pitcher. So, like, they add David Price in theory. So now you've got three A-level pitchers to go with all those young bats. Like, why are they not going to be great for a
while? It's weird. Like, they should be, but it's just the Cubs, man. Like, they were supposed to have a nice 6-7 year window when they had Kerry Wood, you know, and it just did not happen. 2003 happened, and after that, everything just kind of it just fell apart. Things don't work out the way they're supposed to with this franchise. I hope it happens. I mean, remember Mark Pryor was going to be the best pitcher in the big leagues for a decade. And his arm fell apart. Listen, if Theo
Epstein, that's the thing. Arms. So, like, that's why I would be more concerned as a Mets fan.
Because they're more relying on pitching.
Yeah,
because
they're relying on DeGrom being awesome, Harvey being awesome, Syndergaard being awesome, Mats being awesome. And if those four guys stay healthy, like, the Mets might average, like, 100 wins a year for the next, you know, three, 4 years. I mean, those are four really strong pitchers. And, you know, Mats is a rookie. Syndergaard's a rookie. DeGrom's in his first full year. And, you know, Harvey's still young, but, like, those arms could just, you never know with pitchers. Like, the arms could just fall off. Those bats don't go away, though. The bats that Chicago has, like, hitters hit.
I know. They should. I know. But
except for Yasiel Puig. That's the only one that doesn't make sense.
Isn't that crazy, though? That's so weird.
He was a star who can't even get off the bench now.
I know. It's bizarre. I first of all, I'm loving the CBS Sports Eye on Baseball podcast right now. But
like, I was so bored through the whole college basketball part of the podcast, and now I'm, like, energized. I'm talking baseball. I am going to go, if the Mets do win Thursday night, I am going to go to Wrigley next week.
Yeah, and I might be able to go to Citi Field, which is – I would love to actually go to a game with you, GP, but different parts of the country can't swing it. But let's hopefully the Mets win, and if they do, we'll set up some sort of little fun wager on Twitter. But I wanted to get that in before we finish the podcast.
Deal. All right, remember, you can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Sometimes turns into an Eye on Baseball podcast at iTunes. Quickest way to get your hands on the latest episodes. Make sure you do that, and we will talk to you again next week. Till then – take care.